Welcome to Not Enough Champagne, a podcast trying to fill a void. My name's Corey Hazelhurst and my partner in propaganda is Steve Haynes.
Hey Corey.
The void in British politics we're trying to fill is the centre ground. And the Economist leader says the Lib Dems are failing to fill the void in the centre of British politics. I think it's fair to say, Steve, they've got a point.
Yeah, pretty much.
So, in this podcast, what is the centre ground now and who will fill it in British politics? There's two conceptions, I suppose, basically, of the centre ground. You've got the centre as dividing lines. So that's the kind of Gordon Brown or George Osborne approach. You try and make your opponents on the wrong side of the argument. Then you've got the centre ground being a set of policies which are neither left or right, and the classic Blairite formulation is whatever works.
Neither left nor right, just liberal, as Nick Clegg kind of put it.
Bless him, yes.
Nick.
Nick Clegg, the centrist in the middle of the road who got run over.
Yep, pretty much.
I think what's interesting with British politics at the moment is it's not quite clear exactly where the centre ground is when you look at those two things. So if you were to look at the centre ground as in almost where most MPs are, where it feels like the centre ground is, actually, most MPs voted to trigger Article 50. Most MPs voted to leave the single market, didn't try and vote for the Chuckramal amendment, which would try and keep the UK in the single market. However, when the Economist and the Lib Dems talk about being in the centre of British politics, they mean a liberal pro-European party. So what are we to make of this dichotomy?
There's so many things you could make of it. I mean, there's also a third definition, I'd say, of centre-ground, which is what the British people think and want. That's not necessarily the same as kind of using those dividing lines or putting things on there, because there are a number of issues, for instance, where, take the death penalty as an example, where the British public are very much in favour of bringing back the death penalty.
Not quite as much as they used to be.
But there's still a majority for it, or at least a plurality for it. And, you know, no MP would ever think, for instance, of utilising that as a wedge issue, necessarily, or very few would.
Very few, yes.
Maybe Priti Patel, but...
Jacob Rees-Mogg, Philip Davis.
Yeah.
Peter Bone probably has dreams about the death penalty.
So I think there is that third kind of notion about where the public is as well, which is kind of a part of that wedge issue approach, but it's still separate, because there are still areas where you can... It's still, you don't touch it politician.
And that's the Tony Blair approach to centre ground politics, isn't it? Like,
yeah.
The centre ground is almost like a garden. The way that Tony Blair talks about the centre ground is like some mythical place, and you just put your tanks on the centre ground and just refuse to leave it.
And I just have this image of Tony Blair riding through Tiananmen Square.
As long as it's not through Baghdad with a tank. And maybe the problem that the Lib Dems had in the election, and we have touched upon this in previous podcasts, is that maybe they're trying to look at the centre ground. I mean, they're trying to be on the right side of history. They're looking at the centre ground as their pro-Europeanism is part of their centre ground appeal.
Yep.
Problem is, that's maybe not where most of the British public is at the moment, and hence the dividing line, I suppose, at the moment. And we talked about this a little bit on our election post-mortem podcast. If the dividing line between Labour and the Tories in June would have been Labour was an explicitly anti-Brexit party wanting to stop Brexit, and the Tories would have been pro-Brexit, I think that might have been fatal to Labour's chances, that actually the Tories probably would have gained seats, even with that disastrous campaign. Whereas because Labour explicitly said it accepted the referendum result, but yet was a bit more nuanced, / incoherent, / constructively ambiguous, they were able to hoover up a few more votes.
Yeah, I think that is probably roughly correct. And I think, again, going back to the definitions of centrism, is that almost a lot of the time when people use centrist, they mean not extreme.
Or evil, in the case of certain left-wing columnists.
Yeah, but so when the Economist or the Lib Dems talk about the centre-ground, they mean not to the far left or not to the far right. And in the Economist case, because of their the ideology of that particular magazine, they view Brexit as an extreme action, which is a bad thing, and therefore the centre sensible approach is to be pro-European, try and exit from Brexit, and you know, crack on with things almost as normal, rather than carrying out the actual result of the referendum. That's kind of where you get a bit into a bit of a muddle with all of this sort of stuff. It's very difficult to extricate all of the different definitions from each other, because they get used interchangeably for so many different things that, to be honest, I'm almost coming to the opinion that there is no centre ground anymore. There is only just an individual's perception of what the centre ground is.
I suppose the fact that there's no centre ground would perhaps explain a return to two-party politics in the election. The fact that you have the Tories and Labour on 40% in a way that there was 30, 40, 50 years ago. The 60s, when there was this big two-party system, actually, there was quite a lot of consensus between the parties. I mean, they talked about Bootskillism. Mm-hmm. So there was this sense of the Tories accepting the welfare state that was built by Clement Attlee's Labour Party until the growth of Thatcherism. Is it that there's a new centre ground coalescing around an acceptance of Brexit? Or is it that actually we have got two parties, that almost voters are going into two tribes, the Tory tribe and the Labour tribe, and because of a cultural divide that we've talked about previously on the podcast?
Yeah, I mean, I suspect it's, like, my gut instinct is more that it's down to that kind of that cultural divide. I think there is an element of acceptance of the result. I mean, for instance, both you and myself, we both voted Remain, but I think we'd both be a bit perturbed if suddenly by shenanigans of some sort we ended up not leaving the EU. I think we'd both kind of go, whilst this might be the best thing economically, that's a bit dodgy in terms of the democratic legitimacy of that decision and things, depending on the thing.
Depends how the Brexit negotiations go, but at the moment, soft Brexit, dear God, please, EFTA or EEA or something.
But you know what I mean. If for whatever reason, Theresa May were to turn around, or Corbyn were to turn around and say, neither of us really are actually going to carry out this Brexit thing, that would be a massive democratic deficit, which would rightfully anger an awful lot of people, given that, yes, referendums aren't binding, but when you go to the British people, who are technically the source of all sovereignty in a democratic system, in the British democratic system, and you say, you are making this choice, you need to follow through with it, you know. So
there was talk of a new centre party, and people like James Chapman, David Davis's former chief of staff who's gone rogue, Dominic Cummings, of former director of Vote Leave, has talked about maybe the need for a new centre party, as has reborn political pundit Gary Lineker. There was rumours that a centre party was going to be set up after the election between Chakra Mana, Anna Sowdry, maybe even Lib Dems. Do you think there's any chance of that happening in the next few years?
No, absolutely none. I just don't think the conditions are right for it. To be quite honest, I think we've seen with the 2017 general election result that there is not an appetite for something that's not Labour and not Tory, because the Lib Dems, despite gaining seats, their vote went down from what it was in 2015. The Greens fell back, UKIP fell back. People aren't interested currently in, you know, another option. I think because of that cultural split, people have got, like most people have, fucking see in either the Tories or Labour someone that represents them. And as long as they've got that, you're not going to have that extra space opening up for another party. When you've had like the rise of the Lib Dems previously, or the success of the SDP, it was always when everything was on the might have been relatively extreme, thinking Michael Foot on one hand and Thatcher on the other, but there was at least an appetite for it from the British public, potentially, which is demonstrated by the fact that the SDP at various points were, I think, out-polling Labour in the odd one or two polls, but they were constantly getting like 20-odd percent and things like that, and which collapsed, obviously. But, you know, there was at least a notion and an appetite for it. And I don't think that that exists currently. People are much more aligned with either Labour or the Tories currently. And I also think another potential factor in this is that there aren't the big names or the big beasts really that you'd look at and go, I would take that person seriously who would split. So if you look at the names that you bandied about previously, you said Anna Salbury.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I like Anna Salbury, but she's not a big name really in that regard. Chuka Amana, no one cares. Let's be honest. And the Lib Dems. So you'd at that point it probably was Tim Farron. No one would care. Or if it were to happen now, Vince Cable. Maybe people care a little bit more now. His ratings are actually better than Corbyn's currently, not by much. Like Corbyn's on -1. Cable's on -1. Corbyn's on like -3. But he's still not a big beast. It's not Roy Jenkins splitting off from Labour. It's not someone who's, you know, a big name who actually carries weight and gravitas. The Gang of Four mattered. A modern-day Gang of Four? Who would it be, really, that would actually carry that weight?
Tony Blair, Peter Mandelson, George Osborne and Ken Clark. However, that's not going to happen. And a party launched with those four would get precisely 5 votes.
And not even from us.
No. Wow. No votes for Tony Blair or Peter Mandelson saying that Chuka Amana doesn't matter. We're still blotting our Labour moderates copybook, aren't we? Someone in Labour First is still making notes and adding it to our dossiers.
I like the notion that you think they have dossiers on us.
They have dossiers on everyone. I think you're right about a centre party. Maybe there's a small people who feel politically homeless, but when the crunch comes to it in the general election, they will vote for whoever they think is the lesser of two evils in their seat. Come what may, glory be to our wonderful voting system. I think also the reason why there's not going to be a centrist breakaway is because we've already had one. In fact, I would probably argue we've had two. So we mentioned the SDP, which, as you say, because of our voting system, wasn't the greatest of successes. Also, I'd argue New Labour was a little bit of a centrist breakaway. People are looking for a British Macron. But if you think about the youthfulness and the charisma and taking policies that are neither left or right and appealing to quite a broad swathe of the public, actually, Tony Blair is probably the nearest we've had to was the British Macron par excellence. I think so.
When before Macron.
He talked about New Labour being the political wing of the British people. He always talked about it being Labour governing from the centre. If people want to buy us dinner, we will lecture you for hours on the nice things that New Labour did that progressives should be proud of. But explicitly, they governed from the centre. The fact that you've already had those two centrist breakaways makes it very unlikely it's going to happen again.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that.
And that's before you add in David Cameron's failed modernisation, or one could say his mixed results with his modernisation of his party, plus Nick Clegg trying to reposition the Lib Dems as a centre party as opposed to being a more centre-left party. And one could say that's not really brought electoral rewards, being as it did, reducing their number of MPs by 50. So if we think the centre ground is going to shift, is that going to be... Do you think that the reaction against austerity that we've talked about on the previous few episodes, is that going to mean the centre ground shift a little bit more left over the next few years?
I would say so, yes. I struggle to see how the Conservatives can go into another election just saying austerity is necessary and just kind of taking it for granted that people will agree with them. You know, that opens up a massive opportunity to kind of focus on, you know, more traditional kind of left-wing policies about on increasing public expenditure and things like that. And I think the very fact that that is even a notion now means that that centre ground, for however you want to term it, has shifted over to the left. That Overton window has moved. In fact, that's an entire thing we haven't talked about. Is the centre ground just the Overton window?
We do have an episode on that, though, which we'll put in the show notes.
Yeah, I am expecting, in many ways, the Tories to kind of take what Theresa May was trying to do with their manifesto and her campaign, but do it more competently. So it will be less goodies for pensioners because we can't afford it, more focus on younger voters and giving out things to them, whether or not they're going to be the right things or have the right kind of focus on those younger voters is a separate issue. But I can easily see a situation where we're going to be up for spending more money
I think you're right in that Theresa May, it's obvious that she wants a legacy beyond Brexit. She wants to have achievements of improving Britain that go beyond coping with Brexit. I think the only problem is that's not going to happen. Brexit's such a big defining issue. She will be defined by Brexit regardless of whether it's a success or not.
Yeah, I mean, arguably she's already been defined by the fact that she blew an unlosable election as well. But that's a separate point.
We're done, aren't we?
Yeah, I think so.
Lovely. So, we'll have a regular episode up on Sunday. Check out our website in the meantime, notenoughchampagne.com. Check out our Facebook page, facebook.com/notenoughchampagne. Check out Dave Depper, he does our theme tune, Fucking Good Times. Check out James Cram, who designs our logo. You can follow him on Twitter, @JamesCram. I'm @PaperbackWriter.
I'm @CinderRadical.
Happy plotting.